This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. In New York, labor officials have launched an aggressive effort to help immigrant workers. Nearly half of New York City's workforce is foreign-born, and the State Department of Labor says immigrant workers are routinely exploited. NPR's Jennifer Ludden has our story about a new campaign to encourage workers to report abuse.
In the largely Dominican neighborhood of Washington Heights, Carmen Calderon mans a folding table loaded with pamphlets and tries to flag down passersby.
Usted lo tiene. ¿Tú conoces tu derecho como trabajador? Sí, seguro.
You know your rights as a worker? She shouts to a sandwich delivery man on a bike. He smiles and keeps going.
Know your rights as workers in the state of New York. Know our services. Okay, we'll be here till 4.
The Labor Department is sending Calderon all over the city with this outreach effort. And she says it's amazing what immigrant workers don't know. What the minimum wage is, that they should get overtime or a lunch break, or that labor laws apply to them, even if they're here illegally.
Immigrants are really humble people. They don't want to ruffle any feathers. It's like, wow, he's doing me a favor. He gave me a job, but he doesn't realize that he's getting abused by the person supposedly doing them the favor that gave them the job.
Labor officials say all this means wage and hour violations are stunningly widespread, from upscale restaurants where bathroom attendants are paid only in tips to the city's car washes, where inspectors last year found three-quarters did not pay minimum wage or overtime. Faced with such an overwhelming problem, New York's Labor Department has joined forces with immigrant advocacy groups for what they call Wage Watch. It's an approach taken straight from the concept of neighborhood watches.
We should try to move quickly because we have, four more to go.
On a cool evening, four teams of state investigators descend on the Tony neighborhood of Park Slope, Brooklyn. They no longer wait to respond to complaints. Instead, clipboards in hand, they're paying surprise visits to 22 restaurants.
Do you think that's an exit for the...
Yeah.
What about that side one? You don't think that's the exit?
They scope out any basement exits first, then post a member outside. This is in case kitchen workers mistake them for immigration agents and try to flee. At a family-friendly chicken place, the team heads inside.
My name is Aristotelis Rodriguez. I work for the New York State Department of Labor. We're basically conducting an investigation of your business.
The cashier looks wary and gets on the phone to call the manager. A few customers near the front window don't seem to notice anything. Rodriguez heads to the back bar to start interviewing waitstaff.
El domingo, ¿a qué hora comienzas a trabajar?
A las cuatro.
¿A las cuatro de la tarde?
Sundays, he asks. What time do you start work? 4 p.m., says a worried-looking young man. And when do you stop? At 11. Tuesdays? 11 to 11. They go through each day of the week, then move on to pay.
¿Le paga por semana? ¿Cuánto le paga la semana?
Do they pay you per week? How much? It's per shift, the waiter says. $25 for an 8-hour shift. That's less than half New York's minimum wage for waiters. And the man says he gets no overtime.
¿A qué hora usted empezó el día de hoy?
Hoy empecé a las 11.
On the sidewalk out front, the Labor Department's Terry Gerstein is hearing a similar story. Workers say they're paid in cash. They get no payroll records. One man describes a work week of over 80 hours.
¿Y cuál es su día de cuántos días tiene de descanso?
Yo no tengo descanso. Solo descanso...
How many days off do you have, she asks? None, he says. Maybe 3 hours at most, once a week. The interview suddenly ends as the restaurant manager shows up.
Hola, buenas tardes.
¿Cuál es el problema?
What's the problem, he asks. Some workers scurry inside, others come out to watch.
¿Y cuál es la razón? What's the reason for it?
The reason for it is we're investigating a number of restaurants in Brooklyn.
Gerstein tells him that interviews can sometimes show something different than payroll records. Then she asks for the manager's name and gives him her card.
And I also just want to make sure you know, it's against the law to take any kind of, to retaliate against workers for talking to us in any way, to lower their wages, to change their schedule, to fire them,
listen,
anything like
I know
that.
All those laws. Don't worry, I've been doing this for many years.
The manager, Fernando Tissick, says he'll have his accountant call to clear up any problems. Later, he tells NPR his workers' tips make up for their low hourly pay, and he insists the restaurant isn't breaking any law, though says he doesn't know about provisions on overtime pay. After their sweep, labor officials will decide which restaurants to formally audit. They used to investigate individual complaints, only to see some workers fired. Now, Labor Commissioner Patricia Smith says her department works hard to protect the identities of those who claim abuse.
So we will go in and we will audit the whole establishment so that the employer is much less likely to know who, if anyone, complained.
Smith took over as New York's labor commissioner 2 years ago and says for too long, labor enforcement in New York and at the federal level was lax. Smith says the challenge isn't only that so many workers are vulnerable immigrants. Many of their employers are also foreign-born and may know little of U.S. labor laws.
I talk to a lot of employers who are in violation of the law, and when you ask them what was the story, they basically say, well, I bought this store from, you know, Joe X, and this is what Joe X did, and so this is what I did.
Smith says education is key, and that's where her department's new partnership with immigrant rights groups comes in. Each week in Bushwick, Brooklyn, local activists and union members team up for their own workplace visits.
Hola. El dueño o el manager está por aquí.
In this discount store, they find the manager and hand him a pamphlet on labor laws. They speak with employees and give them a pamphlet about workers' rights. They're also on the lookout for possible violations to report to the Labor Department. Nieves Padilla of the advocacy group Make the Road New York says she can gather tips better than any Labor Department official. She knows this neighborhood, and everyone knows her.
Even if I'm just in a store to buy something, all the managers think I'm investigating. They say, ah, here's the troublemaker. They follow me around and try to keep me away from their employees. But the workers know me too. And actually, we have a way of communicating without even speaking.
Padilla demonstrates this knack in a health and beauty store where one employee seems too nervous to talk. As the woman watches, Padilla strolls into an aisle and sticks her workers' rights pamphlet between boxes of hair color. The employee smiles as she discreetly retrieves it. The manager has seen nothing.
Okay. Cuídese. Tenga buen día.
New York's wage watch is just a few months old. Officials say it's too soon to measure success. The pilot program is set to expand across the state this summer. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And the housing market may be finding its footing. A survey from the National Association of Home Builders shows falling prices are making homes, quote, more affordable now than they've been in nearly two decades. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
Nobody who owns a house likes to hear that home prices are falling, but those falling prices themselves are actually a powerful force when it comes to fixing the housing market. That's because cheaper homes get more people buying again. Mark Zandi is chief economist of Moody's Economy.com. He says that these latest affordability numbers are encouraging.
The bottom in the housing market is coming into view. I mean, home sales have stabilized from where they were at the end of last year, and that's because of the much improved affordability. You combine record low mortgage rates with these very low house prices, and housing becomes much more affordable, and people sense that and are now going out and looking at homes, and some are even buying.
And so, you know, it doesn't seem, though, yet like we're seeing a real flood of buyers into the market. What's going on?
Well, there's still two big problems in the housing market. First is jobs. We're losing lots of them, and unemployment is rising, and not until the job market stabilizes will we see home sales really begin to pick up. And the other is psychology. People see prices falling, and they don't want to catch that falling knife. They want to get the house at its lowest price. So they're still waiting. They sense and feel, and probably rightfully so, that prices are going to move even lower, and affordability will move even higher.
Zandi thinks house prices will keep falling, at least through the rest of this year. A big factor there is the foreclosure mess. Literally millions of those homes keep getting dumped on the market at fire sale prices. So Zandi doesn't see prices really stabilizing until the government and the industry manage to prevent more foreclosures. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
And let's find out now what happens to a renter when a property goes into foreclosure. Many continue to pay rent even after the landlord stops paying the mortgage, which does not necessarily stop a renter from being evicted. Kathy Ducharme reports.
I found Deborah Stokes on Craigslist in Washington, D.C. Her ad was in the housing wanted section.
I'm a good renter. and I want to look for a good landlord.
Stokes moved from Chicago to Rockville, Maryland last fall, looking for a fresh start as a curator at the Smithsonian's African Art Museum. But 5 months after Stokes signed her lease, the landlord told her the condo was heading into foreclosure.
I've rented many apartments all over the world. I've rented in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Australia, Amsterdam, Africa. I've never been in this situation. Never.
Quite frankly, they're one of the innocent victims.
That's John Nethercutt. He runs Public Justice, a Baltimore tenants' rights group. Nethercutt says renters make up about 40% of families facing evictions due to foreclosures, a study picked up from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. Nethercutt says in most states until recently, there was no formal way to notify renters about foreclosures and no legal requirement to do so.
As a result, a lot of tenants were honestly surprised. They've been paying their rent. They didn't even know there was a problem. And then they get an eviction notice from the sheriff.
That's starting to change. More than a dozen states now require that tenants get a notice when they face eviction due to foreclosure. Congress is considering a plan to make a 90-day notice mandatory all over the country. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have stopped evicting tenants from homes they repossess. Instead, tenants can rent month to month until the homes are sold. New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Washington, D.C. require that people who buy foreclosed properties honor existing rental contracts. But the banking industry says that goes too far.
I would say that it creates a disincentive for individuals to purchase foreclosed properties.
Kathleen Murphy leads the Maryland Bankers Association. She says extending leases beyond a foreclosure sale would kill most deals, forcing banks to become landlords, something they don't want to do. Murphy says most renters know that their situation can change any time, foreclosure or not.
My mother lived in a condominium at one point that was a rental building. In 3 years' time, she moved four times because the individual that she was renting from in each instance had decided that they were no longer going to rent or that they were going to put their place up for sale. So it is just one of those risks, I think, that you take as a tenant.
Back in her condo, Deborah Stokes dreads the packing that lies ahead. She's got lots of antique furniture, hundreds of art books, and no money saved for the move. Stokes says this time around, when a landlord asks for $35 for a credit check, she'll say,
"Well, I'll need $35 from you to run a credit check on you. The next rent that I pay, I'll know who I'm renting from and what their resources are, what's behind that property."
And wouldn't you know, there's a company offering something like that. RealtyTrack sells what it calls renter alerts. For $25 a year, you can find out if there's any foreclosure activity on the place you rent or want to. The service is limited to the 1.8 million properties RealtyTrack monitors, mostly in urban parts of the country. For NPR News, I'm Kathy Duchamp.
No matter how bad the economy gets, there is one industry that can never scrap its annual convention to save money. You don't want to cut back on travel too much when you are the travel industry. About 200,000 tourism and travel jobs evaporated last year. Still, NPR's Greg Allen found a festive mood at the travel convention in Miami Beach.
Then again, it's hard to be gloomy when you're in the middle of a party. It's a street band in Little Havana trying to start an impromptu conga line. Representatives of travel companies from around the world are in Miami this week to make their deals with U.S. suppliers, resorts, hotels, and the like. The U.S. Travel Association estimates that deals made during this convention will generate more than $3.5 billion in travel over the next few years. In the hall at the Miami Beach Convention Center, more than 1,000 U.S. travel companies have set up shop. One entire aisle is devoted to the Intercontinental Hotels Group, a company that includes the Crowne Plaza and Holiday Inn brands. Industry-wide, hotel revenues in April were down 20% from last year. Jimmy Thomas with Intercontinental says his company is doing better than that, especially in the larger markets. But in order to fill their hotels, room prices, he says, have dropped substantially.
In many markets, they're down to post-9/11 rates. And I'm not going to mention any markets, but some of them are even below where 9/11 was. New York has come down considerably from where it was like even a year ago. There's tremendous bargains out there. You just have to be able to look for them.
Surprisingly, leisure travel has remained relatively strong. Like the economy in general, it has taken a hit, but is down just 2% from last year. A bigger problem for the U.S. travel industry has been the sudden and steep decline in business travel and meetings. The industry is still feeling fallout from the news last year that AIG sent its executives to an expensive resort for a business meeting just days after receiving an $85 billion bailout. That ignited a firestorm of media coverage and denunciations on Capitol Hill. The head of the U.S. Travel Association, Roger Dow, says business meetings had been a $100 billion a year industry.
The meetings, there was a lot of damage done by those articles and by those stories by elected officials, you know, almost vilifying people for going for a meeting. And that's a shame because that's a legitimate way that America does business. You know, when people don't go to a trade show or a convention, they don't buy the products that the people are selling. And it has a domino effect on our economy.
Back in Little Havana, buyers and sellers of U.S. travel services are enjoying paella and listening to a three-piece Cuban band. Tucker Stover is one of the sellers. He's travel sales manager for Sheraton's downtown Denver hotel. Like others I spoke to, he says business travel is still down, but bookings for meetings and conferences are beginning to pick up for 2010. One factor in the hotel's favor, Sheraton is a mid-tier brand, a safer choice for publicity-conscious executives than luxury hotels and spas. But Stover says buyers are expecting low prices.
Well, the associations and the corporations know that this is their time. It's a great time to buy because they have a lot of leveraging power. And so as they look forward into the year, you know, they may not be able to have the funds to host their meetings this year, but next year they have a little bit more time to save up, and it's showing benefits for them.
Miami, the city that's hosting this year's convention, is also feeling the effects of the travel downturn, but less so than some other large markets. A major reason is foreign travel. Across the country, overseas visitors are down some 10%. But for travelers from Europe and Latin America, lured by beaches, shopping, and a good exchange rate, Miami remains a top U.S. destination. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.